that Parsha Vayetze. Parsha Vayetze, the Parsha of Yetziah, Legalut, for Yaakov, clearly planting the seeds for the Yetziah, Legalut of his children throughout the ages. Yaakov goes out to Galut as being somehow the only place where he can really produce family, create himself, create his unique identity. And to do that, on the way out, just before he leaves Eretz Yisrael, he needs to go and stop at the place that his father and his grandfather were at already, and that is Beit HaMikdash. He has to go through an experience of an eye-opening experience of as to what the nature of the place is. And we saw that Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov's coming to Beit HaMikdash is three different meetings with the place, with the Makom, which is the way Chazal actually learned from the Pesukim, that Makom is the Makom, that is Beit HaMikdash. Corresponding, of course, to the three meetings that Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov each have separately in terms of the way they stand specifically, individually, in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Elokei Abraham, Elokei Yitzhak, Ve'elokei Yaakov, as we saw. Clearly, the fact that we go up three times a year, Gimel Regalim, go up to Beit HaMikdash, correspond to the three going up of Avram, going up, Yitzchak going up, Yaakov going up. How exactly does it break down? Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov is spoken about. We're not going to talk about it right now. But in any case, we saw that Yaakov Avinu has to do with the tefillah of Mariv, which we learned from these psukim. By the way, how do you understand that? I don't know if we touched upon it, but I don't know how much we've defined it last year. Why is Dafka Yaakov mitakin tefillat Arvit? What is it about? What he's out to accomplish, which has to do specifically with this tefillah, which brings about and surfaces and brings out what that specific nature of standing in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu at night is about. Yes, Benji.
It's about darkness. Yaakov's whole life is about like sorrows and troubles and kind of darkness. You don't really know where you're at, where you're going.
Right. One can definitely find sources in Chazal to it, clearly. Chazal explicitly say so, but logically, conceptually in our mind, it's not so hard to make that correlation, which is explicitly, as I said, brought down that Geula is comparable to day, and Galut is that to night, and as Yaakov Avinu is going out to Galut, he's going through into night, and therefore his whole experience with Beit HaMikdash is that of night, and his whole standing in front of Kadosh Baruch Hu is that of night, and that's his tefillah. In fact, his going out to Galut is described as Kibah HaShemesh, right, as the sun set, as he's going out to Galut. And look, please, in our parsha, Parsha V'yetze, see the specific pasuk inside. The first pasuk, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva Vayelech Harana, Perek Avchei Pasuk Yud Aleph. Excuse me. Vayifga b'makom Vayelan Sham Kibah HaShemesh. Yaakov goes out to Galut Kibah HaShemesh as the sun sets. How does Yaakov come back from Galut? Where in the Torah does Yaakov come back from his Galut? Parsha Vayetze we saw was one paragraph, one piece. Yaakov going out to Haran, accomplishing his family. And towards the end of that Parsha, he comes back to Eretz Yisrael, which he really takes us into the next Parsha, Parsha Vayishlach. Switch, please, to Parsha Vayishlach. In the course of coming back, his return to Eretz Yisrael, which clearly corresponds historically to the return of Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael, has to come together with a confrontation with Esav. Prior to that, as Yehuda mentioned, confrontation with the Sarosh Shel Esav. But in any case, it all revolves there around his confrontation and his ability to deal with and confront with the Sarosh Shel Esav, his return to Eretz Yisrael. If you look inside, please, in Perek Lamed Bet, Pasuk Lamed, chapter 32, Pasuk Lamed. Next parsha. And Sefer Bereshit, Perek Lamed Bet, Pasuk Lamed, seat inside, please. This is right after he has confronted, on whatever level we understand, that confrontation, physically, metaphysically, with the Sarosh Shel Esav. But in any case, Perek Lamed Bet, Pasuk Lamed, Vayikra Yaakov Shema Makom Pniel, Ki Raiti Elohim Panim El Panim Metinatzel Nafshi, ויזרח לו השמש כאשר עבר את פנואל והוא צולע על ירחו. The meaning of the limping of Yaakov, we're going to still see what that means in the next parasha in a few days. But in any case, he comes back to Eretz Yisrael and the sun rises for him. Now this is not my connection, Chazal explicitly say so. He goes out to Galut with the setting of the sun and he comes back, and that's associated with and comes together with the whole concept of the rising of the sun. Okay, now we know sources in Chazal that Geulatan Shel Yisrael are comparable to that of the rising of the sun. The Geula was compared to Ayelet HaShachar, to the coming, the breaking through of the light through the darkness at the end of days. And that is, the Chazal say, that just like the sun rays come slowly, slowly, some slowly, but in the end they shine strongly, so too also Kach Geulatan Shel Yisrael, Batchila Kim'a Kim'a, the beginning slowly, slowly, bit by bit, and then it full clarity, full light. Anyways, this is the going out to Galut, as Benji said, Mariv, Yaakov, a life full of tzaras, corresponding to the long history of Klal Yisrael, which is going to be the unfolding of Yisrael, the prototype, Yisrael Saba here, Yaakov Avinu in Sefer Bereshit, corresponding tonight, the ability to stand in front of God and to relate to Him, relate to life correctly, in a state of the absence of reality, in a state of absence of light, in a state of darkness. And that's a whole other mode of standing in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu that Yaakov Avinu brings out into the world in the course of his long and very painful stage after stage life. So on one level we can understand Yaakov having to connect to Beit HaMikdash on that level of night. I though mentioned that there's another, clearly deeper levels or other levels, because we know that in Aliyah LaRegel, when we come up to Aliyah LaRegel, we learn from Sukkim in the context of Pesach, that every Jew has a chiyuv. Besides making Aliyah LaRegel, he has to actually sleep one night. He has to sleep the night of, actually comes out two nights. But he has to sleep the Motzei Yom Tov, and only then go back home. There's something about sleeping, Lina, that you have to produce, you have to be in Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim and Beit HaMikdash in a state of sleep. And I said I'm not sure exactly what it means. It clearly comes back to my mind, at least, to Yaakov Avinu sleeping in this place. After Shir, we spoke a few guys after Shir, we came out of that conversation, opened up some new ways of thinking. That is, it's possible, I expressed after Shir the possible need to make a connection to the fact that Adam HaRishon finds his shidduch, his zivug, in the context of sleep, dafka. Somehow, the ability to connect to something and bond to something from a higher place than awake consciousness, from a deeper place than regular consciousness. That may have to do with why we need to not just be in an awake state in Beit HaMikdash three times a year, but we also have to be in a state of sleep there also. Somehow, our mind, our soul, our being is meant to connect on a deeper level than just our daily consciousness, but that's just speculation. And then in any case, back to our discussion, and what we started speaking about on Wednesday, and I would like to develop it today and see deeper levels of its meaning, and that is the actual vision of Yaakov Avinu in this place of Beit HaMikdash, his chalom, his vision of how he sees Beit HaMikdash, or if you wish, how he sees the world, and that is of a sulam mutzav altsa deroshom adia shamayma malachei Elohim, going up and down, a ladder with its feet in the ground. And and its head is up above Shamayim, v'hineh Elokim atzav alav, and Malachei Elokim go up and down. This is the way Yaakov Avinu sees the place. This is the way, if you wish, Yaakov Avinu sees the world. But what's more very important to emphasize, and hopefully we'll get to that today, that as we emphasize, the way you come and perceive Beit HaMikdash or the world has to do with who you are, what essence actually you represent. So Yaakov Avinu's dream and vision has to do both, if you want to put it as his vision of Beit HaMikdash, if you wish, his vision of himself, a reflection of who he actually is, because the way you will be experiencing the place has to do with specifically your specific individual identity as Yaakov, as opposed to the way Avram comes to the place, as opposed to Yitzchak comes to the place. Okay, Avraham Avinu did not have such a dream. Yitzchak Avinu did not have such a dream. They had other experiences when they were there, having to do with their unique identities that they had to bring out. Anyway, so this is what we've come to, a vision of a ladder stretching from Eretz to Shamayim with Malachei Elokim, Olimbio, Olimbo. All I said last time was the following, that is obviously we have to put it in the context of seeing Beit HaMikdash as the center, focal point of the Bria as a whole, but the Bria itself is defined by Torah as with this system of duality. Bereshit bara Elokim et ha-shamayim ve-et ha-aretz. The world is created as a system that stretches between Shemayim and Aretz. And the focal point of this place, which Yaakov is experiencing now in his vision, is the ladder that connects and goes up, and has Malachim going up and down between Shemayim and Aretz. Okay, this is what we've come to. We haven't cleared everything. We haven't defined anything. Shmuel came to me after Shir and asked me, rightly so, what does it mean, Shemayim versus Aretz? What do we mean by Shemayim? Blue skies, he asked. And that's exactly where we're supposed to take the discussion from. So let's start going into that. So we'll start off with that question. How do you understand this Metziut of, what does it mean, Shemayim versus Aretz? What is Yaakovinu seeing over here? What does it mean that the world was created as a system of Shemayim and Aretz? And its focal point is stretched between Shemayim and Aretz. What is Shemayim versus Aretz? Yes, I think Barry, you were first. We'll go on to Avi.
I guess like Shemayim could have a couple of things. It could just mean the sky, like where the birds fly, or it could mean like the dwelling place of like the nine humans, and I suppose you want to ten types.
Just a lot of the dwelling place
of like divine beings, like Malachim and Hashem. And I guess it would make a lot more sense to go with the second here, because it's in a dream, it's not like a physical realm. Indeed, it's like Malachim was falling down on it. It's clearly like, and Hashem is at the top of it, right? So I think it's that way. So you would have to say that Shemayim here is like where God lives.
Okay, it's the place where God lives. I'll bring a pasuk from Halal that supports what Barry says before we go on to Avi.
Shemayim,
Shemayim, Hashem. Ve'aretz natan livnei adam. Hashamayim, Shemayim, Hashem. Ve'aretz natan livnei adam. In fact, we learn from this pasuk, we learn the halacha that the person has to actually make a bracha. And if the person does not make a bracha before he eats, he's stealing from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because really, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to man aretz. And only once you make the bracha, you're really putting it into the correct context. But in any case, Avi, what do you want to say?
It's like the point of where the physical and metaphysical like realms meet. I mean, if they take it just, I know we had a shiur being a quote of the Zohar, where the neshama, you know, first goes to heaven, then comes to Har Bayit, and then goes up from there. So I mean, the neshama's leaving the guf and then going up to Shemayim, and that's where this separation takes place.
Okay. Yeah. What's your name? Andrew. Andrew? Yeah.
I
fully accept. Avi and Barry, just
similar to what Avi said, but the Shemayim being the spiritual, the Aretz being the physical, it's just the connection, how the world is always, both of them are always connected, and you can't have one without the other.
Okay, good. I like that's a bit good. Very much a lot of what we want to talk about today. Let's develop it a little. Open up in Parshat Ekev, very famous psukim, quoted in other shirim. Some of the most gorgeous psukim actually that appear in Chumash. One can attribute such a term to psukim. Parshat Ekev, Sefer Devarim, the place in which the Torah actually defines the very nature, the character of Eretz Yisrael. Hopefully we'll still get to that today. Right. So can you say so? In terms of the Ekev? Oh, you mean in terms of the Parsha? Hopefully by the end of this year, we'll reflect upon it. Look inside in Perek Yud Aleph. I didn't understand what you thought originally. Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud. Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud, and Sefer Devarim. These are really psukim that are really worthwhile seeing inside, not the Alpe. Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud. Parshat Ekev, Stam, by the way. Parshat Ekev, if there is one Parsha in the Torah that will be the Parsha that more than any other one describes to Klal Yisrael what the nature of this land is about, many different aspects of it, and what the mode of living in Eretz Yisrael is about, it's this Parsha, Parshat Ekev. And as the Parsha comes to wrap itself up, it says the following. It contrasts Eretz Yisrael with Eretz Mitzrayim. Ki ha'aretz asher ata ba shama lerishta, לא כארץ מצרים היא אשר יצאתם משם, אשר תזרע את זרעך והשקיט ברגלך כגן הירק. The land that you're going to be going into very soon, we're at the end of Torah already, the end of the 40 years, is unlike the land that you're familiar with, where you were coming from, which is the land of Mitzrayim, where to water your fields, you walk down. According to some shots, that's what it means, the watering with your foot. That if to water with your foot means you have to walk down to the Nile, draw water, like a vegetable garden. As opposed to that, Eretz Yisrael is something of completely different nature. Pasuk Yud Aleph. Ve'aretz asher atem avrim sham al rishta, Eretz harim ubekaot, limtar hashamayim tishte mayim. Eretz Yisrael is an Eretz, as opposed to Eretz Mitzrayim, Eretz Yisrael is an Eretz that drinks its waters from heaven. Limtar hashamayim tishte mayim. And that's an expression of, next pasuk, Eretz asher Hashem alokecha doresh ota, it's the land that HaKadosh Baruch Hu seeks. תמיד עיני השם אלוקיך בא מראשית השנה ועד אחרית השנה. הקדוש ברוך הוא's eyes, meaning הקדוש ברוך הוא's direct השגחה, is focused on this land from the very beginning of the year and all the way to the end of the year. And then acting out of this definition of Eretz Israel as the land of rain is v'hayayim shamo, which we say twice a day, and that is, if you listen to my commands and you go in my way of Torah, then the heavens will give their rain and the Eretz Israel will produce its fruit. And if you do not, there will not be any rain. So that's really the acting out, the two sides of the coin of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the land which is defined and the contrasting background of Mitzrayim as the land of rain, which rain again is not just described as matar or geshem, it's matar hashamayim. Okay? So that means, let's add one more, based on this, on top of what Barry and what Avi and what Andrew beautifully said, another floor to everything. How, in light of these psukim, another level of defining what is the relationship between Shamayim and Aretz. Once we think about it in the context of rain, as coming down from Shamayim, penetrating into Aretz. Yes, Yehuda.
Shamayim provides for Aretz.
Shamayim provides for Aretz. Shmuel, what do you want to say? More or less the same. Okay. Shamayim is the provider, Eretz is the recipient. And Lashon HaKadosh, the term we will be using, terms we find a lot, and for example in Sifrei Chassidut, the Mashpia and in the Kabel. He who provides is a Mashpia, Lashon Shefa, provision, giving of any form of life, and the Mekabel, the recipient. If you wish, you can also use more Kabbalistic terminology than the more Chassidut will use, Mashpia and Mekabel, and Kabbalah will use terms more of male and female, Zachar and Nekeva. Different ways of saying this, the same exact thing. And behind it is what I've quoted in other shiurim. There's an incredible Gemara Masechet Tanit. That's an underlying theme in the Masechet. But in one focal place, the Gemara says it explicitly, and that is Mitra Bala De'ar Avu. The rain is the husband of the earth. Just like the husband provides to the wife, so too also the rain to the ground. Let's see other psukim in Tanakh that will bring out everything, taking everything one step further than that. So up to now, what we've said is that it's Shamayim as opposed to Aretz, is the metaphysical realm as opposed to the physical realm, is God's place as opposed to the human place, the realm. And now we're saying it's the provider as opposed to the recipient. And the world is stretched out between the Mashpia and the Mekabel. And that's the way the world is formed. The Rashid Barai Lokim et Hashamayim et Haaretz, based on what Yehuda said, based on the Psukim over here, that's on top of everything that was said before, the world is created as a system of Shamayim versus Aretz. The world is created as a system of a Mashpia system and a Mekabel system. That's the world. The world stretches, the universe stretches in between two ends. The end of the provider, the end of the recipient. That's the way the world conceives itself. Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim ve'et haaretz. Had we never seen Chumash before, and we would have seen the Pesukim as Bereshit bara Elokim et haolam ve'et haaretz, we wouldn't have thought that there was anything strange about it. We're familiar, and therefore we take for granted the fact that the Pesukim started off as presenting as Shamayim and Aretz. At its depth, the truth is Ramban says this exclusively, the Rishonim also, the way Yehuda put it. That this is Shamayim versus Aretz is the provider and the recipient, the Mashpi and the Mekabel, the Zachar and the Nekeva. Look inside in Psukim and in Sefer Yeshayahu, those of you who have full Tanakh. Famous Psukim, we read it in the Haftarah of every Tanish Tzibur. Perek Nun Tet, if I'm not mistaken, in Yeshayahu. No, I'm sorry, Perek Nun Hey. 55 in Yeshayahu. Pasukka, let's start from also beautiful Pasukim. Pasuk Chet. Chapter 55, Pasuk 8. Yesh? You guys have it? Perek 55, Pasuk Chet. Ki lo machshevotai machshevoteichem ve lo darkechem derachai ne'um Hashem, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Don't confuse your way of thinking with my way of thinking, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. It's a whole different dimension of thought. Ki gavu shamayim ha'aretz, just like shamayim are lifted above the eretz, ken gavu drachai midarkechem u'machshevotai u'machshevoteichem. As Barry said before. Barry, you want to stand? Sure. Ki kasher yeretz. An agreement that Barry and I had, nothing personal. Ki kasher yered ha'geshem v'ha'sheleg. Listen, look at this, please. Perek nun hei pasuk yud. Ki kasher yered ha'geshem v'ha'sheleg min ha'shamayim. Just like the rain or snow comes down from shamayim, v'shama lo yashuv. And once it comes down from shamayim, it doesn't go back. You never see rain moving backwards. At least, neither did Yeshayahu see. Ki im hirva et ha'aretz v'holida v'itzmicha. Rather, any rain that came out from its source has its target, has its goal. It goes down to the earth. V'holida v'hitzmicha. Holida v'hitzmicha. Mapik in the hay. Meaning it causes the earth, the female earth, to receive it, and to give birth as a result of that. These psukim are just bringing out the same concept of the Gemara Masechet Tanit. The rain causes the land to give birth. The rain causes the land, the earth to conceive. And then, as a result, it gives birth, v'hitzmichat, to the whole world of plant, to the whole world of life. V'natan zera lazorea v'lechem la'alchem. Now, and this is where I want to go on. This is what's important. So the Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm giving a mashal, just like the rain leaves the shamayim and penetrates in the aretz and doesn't go back to the source. Rather, if it already left the source, it's there to fulfill the task of bringing out of earth new life. So too also, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Perek nun hei pasuk yud aleph, ken yihye dvari asher yitze mipi. So too, the words that come out of my mouth, say Hashem, lo yashuv elai reikam. Once a word came out of my mouth, says Hashem, it doesn't come back to me empty. If it left my mouth, meaning unlike, on one more level of the difference between the Hashem speaks and the way we speak. We saw before, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's thoughts and ours are different, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu thinks and we speak and we speak differently. HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks and every word is measured, and every word goes out for direct purpose. Very far away from the way at least most of us speak. So too also, any word that comes out of my mouth, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Lo yashuv elai reikam, does not come back empty. No empty words. And the implications in terms of the way a person handles his mouth are tremendous. I mean, think about it in these contexts, of these psukim, and the job of a Jew is to emulate a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Measure every word. Did it go out to waste or not? You think of great people, Gedolei Yisrael, that you may have been exposed to, and you really get that sense that there's a word that comes out, it comes out for a purpose. There's no word that comes out with emptiness. Such with the usage of any aspect of our body. Anyways, Avi, just 1 second. Ki im asayt asher chafatzti v'itzliach asher shlachtiv. The word that comes out of my mouth will only go out until it goes and fulfills. Ki im asa, it fulfills an action. That which asher chafatzti, what does it mean, chafatzti?
Desire.
Chafetz. V'itzliach asher shlachtiv, and succeeds in the shlichut. What is the shlichut? A mission that I've given him. So we see from this that HaKadosh Baruch himself, through the mouth of Yeshayahu, corresponds the rain coming down from Shammai and penetrating into Eretz as just a mashal or a reflection in our world of behind it, that generally that's the way HaKadosh Baruch works with the world. And that is, there is the Davar Hashem, the word of Hashem, that goes down and doesn't come back until a Ki masayt asher chafatzti. Now, what comes out of this is as follows. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, these psukim, listen carefully, we're going to some very, very, very important concepts. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking of himself as having his chefetz, which you guys described as desire, wish, thought. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has speech, and the speech is there to be actualized in action in our world. Now this brings about a sequence, and we're going to be using this a lot during the year, that Baalei Kabbalah, certain parts of Hasidut and Chabad was developed a lot. Anybody who's possibly read through or learned a little of Tanya cannot not go through such concepts constantly. Let's erase this for a moment. The following sequence. And this following sequence will either describe the sequence of the way things work in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's office up above, or in the way it works in our office. And that is the following sequence of Ratzon, Machshava, Dibur, and Ma'ase. Meaning, whether you talk about it in human terms, in terms of the way our internal system works, or whether you talk about it in terms of the macrocosmic level, the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu works or relates to the world and rules his world, either level you use, it's going to be a system that goes through four different, if you wish, chambers. From Ratzon, to Machshava, to Dibur, and to Maaseh. Meaning, let's talk about it in more simple terms, human terms. Human behavior will be described as running along a sequence from starting from one's deepest chamber in his being, which is his Ratzon, his wish, his will. Okay? Which we will always claim is free. This is the realm where things are free. Ratzon, Bechira Chofshit. Whether we have access, whether we can tap into that realm within us, that's a question of how much we've worked on ourselves. There are people who are many, many, many layers away from it, and therefore they work based on drives and based on instincts like animals, and they don't have any access to their deep, real, free will. Anyways, not our topic of discussion right now. But the way a person will behave, that will start off with a wish, with a will, to be transformed into a thought, to be transformed into speech, to be transformed into action. Okay? That means that this, if you wish, we can say the following. The further back you go to Ratzon, you're going into more and more internal chambers. Or if you're working from Ratzon to Maaseh, you're working from inside outwards, the more and more external chambers. The transition is very easy to see, for example, here, Machshava to Dibur. Speech is the actualization into the world of your thoughts. Speech is just putting into words that which you're thinking. Your chavrusa will tell you, you'll start, you have an idea in your mind, and a pshat in the Tosfot, or something, what you think on the understanding of what the Gemara is saying, and you have a beginning of a thought on a matter, and you won't be able to fully express it, and your chavrusa will say, speak clearly. And the truth of the matter is, the more experience you are in learning, the more you come to realize that often, very often, that once you've spoken out your idea, it's not just as a vehicle to let your chavrusa find out what you're thinking, which otherwise he wouldn't know because he can't read your thoughts. It's deeper than that. You yourself receive clarity by sending your more abstract thoughts into a more concrete form in speech, because that's what speech does to thought. It actualizes it. It clarifies it. It has to define it. As long as it's in the level of thought, it's still it's not as defined. Speech defines. Thought is much more loose. Speech, either you have to choose your words, either you say it like this or like that. Okay? So this sequence of Ratzon, Machshava, Dibur, Maaseh, it's towards more and more actualization until you get to the realm of Maaseh, which is action. Full actualization of anything. So therefore, by HaKadosh Baruch Hu also, he speaks of himself of having his wishes, his thoughts, and the actualization is by him speaking. HaKadosh Baruch Hu always speaks when he brings the world into existence, hence, HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks and the world comes into existence. Baruch She'amar v'haya olam, the 10 asara ma'amarot shebahem nivra olam, or what we say every time before we drink, water. Shakol nihya bidvaro. Everything was created with his dibur, with his words. Kadosh Baruch Hu speaks, Baruch she'amar v'haya ha'olam. Kadosh Baruch Hu's speech brings the world into existence, into full actualization. Anyways, but this is stretched, or this is comparable to that which the Shamayim provide matar into the arts. Okay. So let's go back now, right now, to how we understand it. The world is, Beit HaMikdash is, Shamayim and Eretz and Malachim, Elohim, Olim v'Yodim v'Yodim. How do you understand what the Malachim are doing up and down? What are Malachim? What's the role of Malachim? How, in what context? And based on everything we spoke about, what are the Malachim going up and down? Would you hear that?
The rain.
Well, you can talk about the rain will be on some level like something comparable to that which travels down the ladder. More?
Visions, the blood fire, the Dibur of Hashem.
The Dibur of Hashem. The Dibur of Hashem was described as the word of my word that comes out of my mouth does not come back to me until it actualizes. V'yitzliach asher shlachti. I asked, what is a shlichut? So you said? A mission. Who does a shlichut? Malachim do shlichuyot. In malach echad osei shnei shlichuyot, for example, in Chazal, one malach does not do two missions. Malach is that which is sent out with a mission from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The terminology is, that's the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which go and produce a shlichut in the world. And they don't come back until they actually have fulfilled it. Maybe then they go back and say, we have fulfilled the shlichut. We did it. But we don't come back empty. Yeah. Yes, Elisha.
Elisha?
Yeah. Okay.
So
yeah.
That, like the
Dvar
Hashem comes down and
it
doesn't come back, but the Suman
is
two-way street.
Yeah, they're going back. Two-way street. I'd like to talk about it. I'm going to go into it soon. Yes. And to do that, I'd like to take everything one step further than that. Rashi in Parsha Bereishit brings down, I think Rashi brings it down. Yeah, Rashi brings it down. That Bereishit bara Elokim et haShamayim v'et haAretz. So at some point in the first parak, when describing the 6 days of creation, Rashi in the context there it said, maybe in the sixth day, if I'm not mistaken, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Shamayim, Eretz, and every single day, say Chazal, Rashi brings it down, HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided for either one or for the other, for Shamayim or for Aretz. For Shamayim or for Aretz, on every single day, for example, on the fourth day, the Morot, and then we come to the sixth day. And on the Yom HaShishi, we find a creation which is unique, but does not necessarily belong to Shamayim, and doesn't necessarily belong to Aretz. Rather, who is created on the sixth day?
Man.
And Adam is a being that really shares both. He has a part of his being which really belongs to Shamayim, and he has a part of his being which really belongs to Aretz. What terms do we use to describe that?
Neshama.
Neshama guf. Neshama. And this is really the beginning for what the Mekubalim, in great length, if you wish, in a more down-to-earth, so to speak, Kabbalah book, Nefesh HaChaim, which is accepted in yeshivot, to guest learn. We'll go in great length into these inyanim, which really, at the end of the day, just 1 second, Shmuel, what we find is the concept of Adam is an Olam Katan. I've alluded to it in the past already in previous shiurim, and that is that a human being is a small world. It's a microcosmic world. He corresponds to the world as a whole. And specifically in terms of the terminology that we're using right now, if we're talking about Shamayim and Aretz, macrocosmically, the way it's going to manifest itself in a human being who corresponds to the world, another level of what B'Tzelem Elokim means, is as a being was comprised of a neshama and a guf. Using terminology from before, Barry said, Avi said, and what Andrew was talking about, this is his shamayim side, and this is his guf side. His metaphysical side, and his body side. Shmuel, yes. And what it means is the following, and that is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates shamayim and aretz as apart from each other, but ultimately, as that which is supposed to come back and unify. And the unifying point of the world is the human being, where to the extent that his neshama and his guf are really bound together. And at this point, what I would like to do is develop a little bit some of the points that Andrew actually mentioned. Okay. I have spoken about it, I think, on an individual basis with one or two of the boys here. And that is one of the most puzzling concepts or questions that thinkers throughout the generations have dealt with, and that all the way till today you will find a lot of literature in the matter. One of the biggest question marks with multiple attempts to try to solve the problem, and today there is more and more the notion is that all those attempts were really just rephrasing of the question, and that possibly as long as we are alive in this world, there's no way for us to really be able to see the nature of that which lies behind this mystery. The mystery is, basically, more than anybody else, Andrew really brought it out, and that is human being comprised of a neshama and a guf, or if you wish, a shamayim side and an aret side, going to the crux of it, going to the center of it. This requires thinking, and this requires peeling off any taking for granted of our capacity to actually function on this level. Please try to look at it as if it's the fresh and foremost first time that you're actually examining the issue. The easiest example to bring for this discussion is the following. Amos Lubin decides to move his hand. Now, you see this movement in front of you. It's taking place in the physical realm. It's by my muscle is moving my hands. But when we take back the process to its origin and we really examine it, we get to some really serious trouble. Because my arm will move as a result of the muscle stretching it, and the muscle will stretch as a result of the nervous system sending a message through the nervous system, through my spine, from my brain, a process which is basically an electrochemical process of message being sent from the brain throughout the nervous system, through the neurons, all the way to the muscle, giving it the message to move itself. Hakol yafe. Up to this point, everything I described was completely physiological, 100%, and science today describes it beautifully. Anybody who took any basic course in physiological psychology is familiar with the process of the way the nervous system works. We understand the way it works. We understand, we even know today, the centers in the brain that are actually responsible for that. And that is the physiological process, completely physiological. However, taking it one step further than that, or backwards than that, you get to the next stage, and that is what really began the process, and intuitively we all know that's the case, was my decision to move my hand. Now, the decision in itself, though of course we know is associated with the brain, and we see its reflection in the brain, if we test it, and we can even point out what brain area in the brain is actually associated with the decision starting to have its effect, but the decision in itself, please focus, the decision in itself is mental. That thought, I'd like to move my hand, is a mental thought. It's not comprised of atoms. It's not made out of molecules. It's not measurable. When a kid tells you that he loves you, 8 or 10 or 18, as opposed to somebody else, it's cute. But none of us, I hope, think that that's much, very much intelligent. Because emotions, thoughts, all that belongs to the mental realm, we don't view as being quantified or quantifiable. Rather, it belongs to a whole other realm, which intuitively know is in us, we live based on it, but none of us think that we can put it underneath a microscope. And yet, it triggers off a process which is completely physiological. which is a process which is made up of neurons and messages through the nervous system of chemical and electrical messages going from one neuron to the next until it gets to the muscle, which is definitely physical. The meeting point, this is the moach, where the decision is on some level taking place. Yet no brain surgeon is going to have any anticipation to find the thought drawn or appear in any place in that brain. All that he'll find is gray tissue. And he'll see electrical activity taking place in a certain place associated with the decision, but the decision itself is mental. There is a meeting point over here between that which is completely not and that which completely is physical. And the question is, how in the world can these two realms bind together? Sometimes this is known as the psychophysical problem. Sometimes it's known as the mind-body problem or mind-body duality. And as I said before, there have been incredible amounts throughout the ages of attempts to describe it, define it, resolve it, all of which are basically rephrasing and putting in different contexts, which is important. There's importance to that, but not a solution. Where today, one second, Avi, the notions are possibly that as long as that we are within life, and this is very much defines the very essence of life, there's no ability for us to see it until we step on the outside of it. Yes, Avi.
The mental decision is a decision based on what you feel is best for yourself. If you put a piece of chocolate down without your thinking, it's going to go like that.
So that goes back into discussions we have alluded to before in terms of to what extent our activity is really free, to what extent is it really based on drives. That's a whole other discussion, and that depends on every person and every person in different stages of his life. To what extent is he really free? To what extent is he thinking that he's in the illusion of freedom? That's a whole other discussion. But in any case, whether it was a piece of chocolate there that was triggering it, his eye, the decision in itself, nobody argues with the fact that we experience it, and we know that we don't have any claim to think that to put it into the realm of any molecules. Unless you feel differently, I'll be here. You're right that that which can trigger the thoughts, which is mental, can be something physiological. Absolutely. Yes, Derek.
Can we tie this whole thing into like the Makom HaMikdash, like the Beis HaMikdash is essentially the same thing? So
the what?
The Beis HaMikdash is essentially like the same thing.
What we're talking really about is that, in the to phrase the to basically say what Barry's saying, it's 100%. Somehow it's in the Dafka and Beit HaMikdash, the place, as the Gemara says, the place where heaven and earth actually kiss each other. Where Kadosh Baruch Hu and the world meet. Where, if you wish, the centerpiece of the meeting point between the metaphysical and the physical. And that's the dwelling of place of Kadosh Baruch Hu in our physical world. The meeting point between heaven and earth, or the place where they kiss, it's in that place that Yaakov Inu has the vision that in fact Shamayim and Aretz can bind together and communicate through a system of Malachim. And that's corresponds in every human being in his own internal system, and the fact that his neshama and guf can actually communicate. Now, the truth of the matter is, we go through this process every single morning. We make a bracha in the morning about the physiology of our body, and that's the bracha of
Shariyatza.
And we make a bracha on our neshama, which is Elokai neshama. And according to most minhagim, the most appropriate way to bring the psukim out, to bring the brachot out, the person is really supposed to bind them together and finish off with Rofechol basar umafli laasot, and connect it onto Elokai neshama. There's a lot of discussion. Shulchan Aruch brings it down. And the Ramah speaks about it, and the Mishnah Berurah goes into it. About this, what's the meaning of this bracha? Then there's a focus on what is maftali lasot? What's the big wonder? So there's a few different shots over there. So then the Rama says, the big wonder, shemechaber hagashmi baruchani. We're making a bracha to Hashem who binds together hagashmi, the physical, and the ruchani, and the spiritual, if you wish, the physical and metaphysical. Meaning the physiology of our body is out of this world. It's the most incredible thing. And yet it's not the greatest wonder. And the presence of a neshama is not the greatest wonder. The greatest wonder of all is the fact that the two can communicate both ways, and that's in response to what Elisha is saying, at least on a microcosmic level. That our mental world affects the physiological part in our body, but our physiological part of our body, which is what Avi was mentioning before, affects our mental side. It works both ways. There's malachim that travel down the ladder, and there's malachim that travel up the ladder. Physical experience of pain is going to be sending itself up from my leg, up to my brain, and I'll experience it then mentally as pain, and it can definitely have an effect on my mental state. Or many different physical experiences will have an effect on me emotionally, intellectually, spiritually, or vice versa. Processes which will begin in my mental world and they will travel down into the physical level. A thought of somebody that you love a lot may cause your heart to start beating. Okay, that's going from up downwards, and vice versa. So, as a person wakes up from sleep, which is the time of the day where his neshama and guf have departed from each other, and went through 1/60th of death, waking up in the morning, which is the rebinding of the neshama and the guf back together, has to go through this process. Ultimately through Rofechol Basar, Maflila Asot, binding guf with neshama every single morning again. And that is, in fact, the biggest wonder of them all. We'll continue speaking about these inyanim Bezat Hashem tomorrow. Just make sure that you've finished and completed Parshat Vayetzeh if you have not.